to us anyways. Thank you. That's well said and absolutely true. Other questions, comments?
But I mean, Abraham made a mistake. There's a lesson. But he also, what did he do in the end for Abimelech? He turned around and prayed for the king to have his, him and his wives have more children because God closed up their wombs. So he went through, he did wrong and everything, but his heart was still in the right place.
Yeah.
And he did wrong, but he turned around and prayed for his basically enemy. You know, you're only supposed to pray for your enemy. And
yes. And thank you, Ron. That's a great point also. We don't hear that here in the Egypt account, but that definitely happened with the Abimelech account, where afterwards Abram was praying for, I'm sorry I caused this man all these issues, please bless him despite what I did.
The person I did wrong.
Yes. Yeah. And thank you for bringing that up. That's an excellent point. And I think it's a fair assumption that Abram probably also prayed for Pharaoh to take the illnesses away, bless him. I mean, he was more honorable than me in this whole situation. I think that's a fair assumption that we can make for sure. And we see that elsewhere in Scripture too. Another example that comes to my mind is Job. If you've ever read or are familiar with the account of Job, it's a very long book. But basically, remember, God took everything away from Job initially, including his own children. And then three friends came and sat with him for a while to console him. And then they started railing on him. Job, it's time for you to take accountability for all the wrong things you've done, because there's no way God would let this happen to anybody who was a righteous man. And Job's response was, I know I'm not perfect, but I haven't done anything grossly wrong or disobeyed or whatever. And so they go through all this. And then finally Job says, I wish that God would come down and we could have an accounting. And God did come down and God turned it all upside down on him. But after that all, Job prayed for his friends that God would have mercy on them, because they said a lot of wrong things. So it's another example of a believer praying for those who wronged them. But your example was, this was a good man praying for those who did the right thing when he did the wrong thing. Yeah. Good. Excellent. All right. We're in Genesis 13. So Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev, and his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. Abram had become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. From the Negev he went from place to place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier, and where he had first built an altar. There Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram's herders and Lot's. The Canaanites and Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. You all know where this is going, right? This is one of the most famous stories of in Abram's life. So Abram said to Lot, let's not have any quarreling between you and me or between your herders and mine, for we are close relatives. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. Lot looked around and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan towards Zoar was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out toward the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, and while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tents near Sodom. Now the people of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had parted from him, look around from where you are, to the north and to the south, to the east and the west. All the land that you see I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you. So Abram went to live near the great trees of Mamre in Hebron, where he pitched his tents. There he built an altar to the Lord. All right. Where did Abram end up after leaving Egypt?
Back where he started.
Back where he started, placed between Bethel and Ai, where he had built an altar. What did Abraham do when he was there?
Pitched his tent.
He pitched his tent, but after that also? Yep. Well, he called on the name of the Lord. What does that mean?
Pray.
He prayed, absolutely. But I don't think it's just prayer. We've seen this phrase before. In fact, it goes way, way back to Seth, the son God gave to Adam and Eve after Cain had killed Abel. Talks about there that the people, that Seth called upon the name of the Lord. Well, what was that? What is that? That was a kind of, I guess you call it a euphemism for worshiping God. He worshiped God. He prayed for sure, but I think he just worshiped and praised God for his blessings, his faithfulness. Do you suppose repentance was a part of his worship at this time? Just coming out of Egypt and all that he had done? I would think so, probably. What else? What else was Abram doing here? Not only repenting, presumably.
Giving thanks,
Aubrey, you bet. Because, as we said, what was his hope of getting his wife back when he was in Egypt? Zero. And all of a sudden, she's back with him. He's still alive. And he's wealthier than he had ever been before. He knows where it all came from. He knows who intervened. And so I think it's also a very safe bet that Abram was also thanking the Lord here, praising him for his faithfulness. What are Abram and Lot's financial status at this point?
Wealthy.
They're very wealthy. Large herds were not unusual for wandering shepherds, but what else did Abram have that was perhaps unusual for a nomad?
Money?
Yeah, silver and gold. He wasn't only wealthy in livestock, he was wealthy in precious goods, precious metals. What challenges does the wealth of uncle and nephew present?
They have too much for the land that they're on.
They couldn't live together? Yeah, they had too much livestock. They couldn't live in the same place. Consequently, that led to the second problem, which was
quarreling.
Their herdsmen, shepherds, were fighting, bickering. There's an additional factor in this dilemma as well. What is it? Verse 7. They did, but you not only had the large flocks of Abram and the large flocks of Lot, you also had another factor.
There's the Canaanites.
Canaanites and the Perizzites also lived in the land. Yeah. So they weren't the only ones living there. There was other people living there too, who presumably also had herds, probably. Some of them anyways. How does Abram propose they solve this problem?
Each go in a different direction.
Yeah. Each go in a different direction. They part company. Why is this? This is not in your study guides, I don't think. Extra question. Why is this crucial?
So there's no fighting.
Yeah.
And so they can spread across the land.
Good. Both correct. Yep. So they stop the bickering. They could spread across the land. Other thoughts?
Well, if they all went together, they still have the same problems.
They would have the same problems, right. Abram and Lot were not only physical relatives, but they were also spiritual relatives. At least we presume that Lot was also a believer. He's hanging around with Abram. So they were spiritual brothers and sisters as well as physical relatives. And ultimately, if they're bickering all the time, does that set a good example for the people around them? No.
What I don't understand. You go left, I'll go right. You go right, I'll go left. What's that all about?
Abram's basically saying to Lot, you choose where you want to live, and I'll go the opposite direction.
Okay. That's what I thought. But mm-hmm. Didn't know for sure.
Yep. And you lead nicely, Tom, into the next question. Who will make the decision on where the groups go?
God will.
Well, yeah, ultimately God is directing things, yeah. Right? But humanly speaking,
Lot.
Why could it be strongly argued that Lot should have deferred to Abram?
Because he was older.
He was older, and that was a big, big deal in those days. Abram was Lot's elder, his uncle. But I think there's an even bigger reason, not maybe so obvious.
Because God promised the land to Abram.
Yeah, very good, Aubrey. Because God promised the land to Abram and his descendants.
Good job.
So
this is Israel.
This is Israel, yes. This is the land of Israel that one day, you know, 450 years down the road would become the land of Israel. The 12 tribes, yes. The promised land, Canaan. Yeah. So the land had been promised to Abram and his descendants. And so Abram could have very well said, I'm going to go here, you go the other way. But he let Lot choose.
East.
I'm sorry?
He went to the east.
Yep. Lot chose one direction. He went. Well, we're going to get into that. So what did Lot decide? What did Lot choose? So he looks one way, not so good. He looks the other way.
Lots of greenery.
Woo, that's looking like some mighty fine land over there. Lots of green. Well, Abram, it's a tough choice. But I guess I'll go where there's lots of lush greenery for my flocks. Yeah. Lot chose the plain of the Jordan to the east. If you look at the map on the next page, now yours is not in color, so it's hard for you to... I could have printed it in color, but we pay extra for color copies.
Tom.
That's right. Thought Tom might be concerned about that. But you can see, this is kind of a more modern map, of course. Well, Jerusalem was actually there already. Jerusalem and Hebron. And you can kind of see that. The Dead Sea, very bottom of the map. Possible locations of Sodom and Gomorrah. That was the plain of the Jordan. And this was before God destroyed it all. We'll get to that down the road. But... what is that garden that's referred to there? What is it? What are they referring to? Any idea? You know what I'm talking about? Let's see. Yeah. Where is it? Yeah, verses 10. Lot looked around, saw the whole plain of the Jordan towards Zoar was well watered, like the garden of the Lord. What's he referring to?
The garden.
Garden of Eden. Mm-hmm. Yep, Garden of Eden.
But how would he know what the Garden of Eden looked like?
It was simply passed down from believer to believer. They shared the message, not only of what the garden was like, also the flood, of course, But going way back, the promise God had made to Adam and Eve in the garden, those things were all passed down through word of mouth to the generations. So that was something that would have been, that was a big deal, and it would have been well known by the believers.
Didn't on their staff, why their staffs were so important, didn't they also, I think I've heard something about this, but they actually carved into their history. Their staffs were, am I correct? Or have you ever heard anything like
yes,
that?
I have. They had a number of different ways where they recorded history to keep track of things. Absolutely. And that was a very logical way to do that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so it wasn't just one memory. I mean, they actually had. So you kept your story straight.
And songs, they would use songs. They'd put history into songs and sing those and teach those to their... There's a lot of different ways where that oral history was passed down. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you always hear the atheists, oh, it's oral history. They change that story. And right. They prove it by gold, tell the story around the table, and it comes out different.
Right.
They actually had ways of...
That's right. And the most important thing of all is that God preserved the history because, down the road, Moses is going to record all this for us in the first five books of the Bible as well. So, yeah. But, yep. Good. So, this was very, very different looking land than it currently looks now. Do you remember what happened when God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah?
Lot's wife turned to salt stone.
You're right. Yep. And what did God do to the land?
Destroyed it.
Sent down
fire and brimstone.
totally changed the area. Yeah. We'll talk about that down the road. Was this a good choice by Lot?
No.
Apparently not.
No, in regard to spiritual and moral ramifications. Materially speaking?
He thought it was good.
Yeah, he's going to... Man, we're going to have an easy life down here. Right.
Well, that was such good land. Wasn't there a lot of people there already?
That's right. There was, yeah. But how common was the herding or what? We don't know. But yes, you're right. Moses talks about before. The Canaanites and Perizzites were already in the land, so they were living all through there as well. So he still had to move around, but it was certainly going to be easier for him than for Abram and his flocks. Which leads us to the next question. Abram and his family's life would now be more difficult than Lot's. Was this actually a blessing in disguise? And if so, how? How might this be a blessing that Abram was not going to the well-watered plain of Jordan?
So the land, well, so he's not maybe encouraged to do the bad things.
Very good. That's exactly right. He is not around all these evil people.
Yeah.
He's not around all these wicked unbelievers. Lot is. He's going to end up living right in the city.
And you have to depend on God more.
Yes, he had to depend on God more. That's right, Ron. He had to depend on God more. I think it was also probably a blessing that he was just kind of on the move all the time, never really settled anywhere. So again, he just his heart and mind were forced to rely upon the Lord. Might Abram have had second thoughts about letting Lot choose? And if so, why?
Maybe he already picked that land out and was hoping he'd pick the other one.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, perhaps he was tempted to think, wow, it would have been a little easier for my herdsmen if we were down there. I mean, how could you not cross your mind? Perhaps. We're not told that. But perhaps. God reassures Abram. Verses 14 through 16. What twofold promise does God give him? Number one.
You'll have offspring.
That's the second one. Yep. Your offspring will be like the dust of the earth. When's the last time you counted the dust of the earth?
Never. Too
much. Yeah. Offspring will be like the dust of the earth, uncountable. First promise, everything you can see
is yours.
Is yours. And I'll give it to you and your offspring. Yep. The word forever in verse 15 is better translated an indefinitely long time. How do we know this is the proper translation? You can look at Deuteronomy 30 for the answer. But how do we know that this does not mean that all of this land will always be your descendants? Because what happened later in history? What's that?
Well, they got overrun.
They did get overrun. Now, yeah, you had the two kingdoms. You had the northern kingdom. You had the southern kingdom. The northern kingdom, they turned away from God quicker because kings didn't want their people going to Jerusalem. They got carried away into captivity. They never came back. That land is not Israel now. Southern kingdom, Judah, that is the modern day Israel now. So some of the land, absolutely, is still Abram's descendants, but not all of it. I think this is probably a good place for us to break. So we'll stop there, because I think our time is up. And we'll pick it up there next time. Let's close with prayer. Gracious Lord, I thank you that we have the opportunity to gather together, to spend time with one another, but most of all to spend time in your word and your wonderful truths and to reflect upon how you so actively and wonderfully directed history, especially the history of your people, of us, of each one of us. You are good and you are faithful, and we give you all thanks and praise. Amen.